Since 2021, the Obsidian Theater Festival has featured tons of new plays and music by Black artists, putting a spotlight on them in a field that has plenty of issues with representation. In its inaugural year, the festival was fully streamed. This year, it's the third annual festival, and the Obsidian Theater is adding in-person offerings at a bunch of different locations in Detroit. The Bowl Theater inside of the YMCA, the Chrysler Black Box Theater at the Detroit Opera House, and new this year, very surprised to see this on the list, but excited to see some performances there, is the legendary jazz club Cliff Bells. To tell us more about all of this, we're joined in studio by Culture Shift's Tia Graham.
Well, thank you, Ryan. This year, there will be cabaret performances, panel discussions, artist interviews, and behind-the-scenes videos. You can find all this content featured on the website. And right now, in studio, I have John Sloan III. As well, on Zoom, we have Garlia Cornelia Jones. I want to say thank you both for being here representing Obsidian Theater Festival and all the things that we can expect to see from Detroit artists representing the city of Detroit. Awesome, awesome. So if you can, just for those who may not know and may not understand, who's Obsidian Theater Festival? Talk about the people. Who are you?
Yeah, so OTF started really in the middle of the pandemic, right? It was the summer of 2020. Everybody was stuck inside because of COVID. Nobody really knew what we were doing, what was happening, what was going on. At the same time, you're looking outside in the streets and watching a new rebellion, right? The protests for the murders of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor. And as a Black artist, I was sitting at home and wanting to do something, wanting to express how I was feeling, but not being able to. Right. Having that feeling that I think a lot of us had of being stuck and not knowing how to communicate. And it was around that time that a great friend of mine, a great friend of the city, Rochelle Riley, introduced me to who would become my producing partner, David Carroll. And David and I started a series of conversations about, you know, how do you use art? How do you bridge divides? You know, David lives in West Bloomfield. I'm a Detroiter. And what does it look like to partner suburban and urban? What does it look like to partner across county lines? And how can we build a project? And so Obsidian really grew from that need. It grew from us thinking very intentionally and very clearly about what partnership and collaboration looks like. And it grew from us thinking about how we provide sustainable access to resources. Getting new work produced, getting new theater and music produced is hard. I don't care who you are, it's hard. But it's even harder when you exist at intersections where barriers are intentionally put in your path. And so OTF exists to be able to try to remove those barriers. We have a call for submissions every year, and we take on the full weight, the financial responsibility of putting all these shows up. So the plays, the musicals, the cabaret performances, these are from artists that haven't had a chance to see their work produced yet. Directors, designers, we employ each year over 100 folks in this city. And so it's just really a blessing to be able to put this work up and to be able to have the support of the community to do so.
And, you know, we talk about the city of Detroit. We talk about the things that are happening. Well, at least on the show, we're really covering and what's happening with Black Detroiters in terms of filmmaking, especially when they're running to Tubi and running to all the other sources right now. And it's really, really growing. Talk about what you're seeing right now from your perspective out of Detroit in filmmaking.
Yeah. So listen, it is. I grew up right on the northwest edge in basically Oak Park, went to Michigan for musical theater, then left home. And I think for me, just like a lot of artists at that time, this is early 2000s, there was enough work to be consistent, right? And so I moved to New York. I was on tour for a long time. I lived in LA for a little bit. And when I came back home in 18, what I saw was this massive resurgence of production and of independent production. And, you know, as technology gets better, it also gets cheaper. And so now all of a sudden, what you can do as an independent filmmaker is so much more expansive with a lot less money, really, and resources. So if you just have the want to, if you want to tell a story and you're a good storyteller, you can grab a DSLR and you can go out in the streets and you can make something that still stands up in quality. And so when I came home in 18, I did some work with Allied Media Projects and the Detroit Narrative Agency, started producing some documentary work and really kind of diving in to filmmaking and visual storytelling in that way. Which was new for me because I'd been SAG for a while, but I was on the camera. I was an actor. Yeah. And now standing behind on the other side and producing was a different experience. And so that has been really, really gratifying to see and to see how that's happening and how that's working and functioning. And the combination of being able to take film and live performance and theater and put them on top of itself, that's really exciting.
And is that something that you're seeing as widespread right now happening? Well, you're seeing these layers of different, I guess you can say different genres or different, you know.
Expressions, yeah. Modalities, yeah. Like different know-hows that are all kind of coming together at one time. You know, I think in a lot of ways, all of these industries are still reeling and pivoting, recovering from COVID. And to say that COVID is completely gone, I think is also not true, right? Like folks are still getting sick. Hopefully they're vaccinated, so that is lessened. But you know, in theater and live performance, what I call the analog art forms, concert, ballet, dance, and that's not a pejorative, right? They're just, you know, stuck a little bit in like the 1700s sometimes. Like those art forms are they need folks to show up in person, and that's hard. When the audiences skew 45 and up, when folks are trying to still manage their health, when folks are still concerned about pandemic. And so the combination of streaming and filming theater and ballet and opera and even seeing like what some institutions in like MOCAD and DIA and other art museums have been doing to try to bring more folks in, that I think is the future of what's going to happen, because you also then create access for a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old who's just on their phone or their device scrolling through and saying, oh, wait a minute, what's this? And so it allows us really to really be accessible and to open up and break down those barriers.
I love that we had that little segue there, because you are starting the third Obsidian Theater Festival. It's the third one.
No doubt.
Which is amazing to think that you all have started in a pandemic and now you're on your third one already, which is like you actually picked up steam and actually continued to grow. So I just want to bring in Garlia, if you can. Talk a little bit about, you know, the inception of the Obsidian Theater Festival, and just talk about where you all are now versus, you know, when you started in the pandemic and you couldn't even meet together. Are you there?
Looks like we've got some connection issues with Garlia. We're going to work on that while we continue our conversation.
Technology. We're just talking about technology.
Well, I mean, listen, the benefit of having somebody like Garlia on the team is that not only is she a native Detroiter, but now she works in New York at the Public Theater, which is one of the largest, most respected theaters in the world. And being able to have somebody like her on the team, somebody like Amber Gray, somebody like Kenneke Jones-Jones, like being able to bring these folks in and have them also leverage their not just their responsibilities, but their talents and their minds, their voices, is so extremely impactful with how we produce.
And, you know, we think about networking, and I often think about, you know, we talk about creating lanes for people and avenues for Black Detroiters to tell stories, not just Black Detroiters, but Black people in general. But when we're talking about the city of Detroit and creating avenues and lanes for yourselves, networking historically has been one of those things that truly has been blocked off.
Absolutely.
So talk about having Garlia there in New York and having that connection there to have a true, I guess you can say, authentic connection, a networking growing.
Yeah. So, you know, when I wasn't living at home, I was on tour with a show called The Lion King. You might have heard of it.
Maybe.
A small little show. And one of the benefits of being on that tour is that I got to go to a lot of different places. I got to see how artists produced in Philly. I got to see how artists produced in Montreal. I got to see how work is done in Europe. And that was a really formative experience for me as a younger artist. The only difference between Detroit and New York isn't the people and it's not the talent. It's the amount of opportunity. So in New York, because there are so many theaters and producing organizations, there are so many more opportunities for artists to get their work. And when you get work, what happens? You get better. You sharpen your knife, right? You work for different directors and different producers. You work with different artists and different designers, and you grow. So when you don't have as many opportunities, your ability to grow is stunted. Right? That doesn't mean your talent is stunted. Yeah. That doesn't mean your drive or your want to is stunted. It means you don't have as many opportunities to sharpen that knife, right? Mm-hmm. And so what it means for us to be able to connect with artists in New York or LA or wherever isn't that we're replacing anyone. It's that we're engaging Detroit artists and giving them those opportunities to continue to sharpen their knives. And so when Garlia is in New York and she's having a meeting at National Black Theater and she's like, hey, you got to come to Detroit and check this out. What does that mean? That means that we're pulling in huge resources and that can get leveraged here in this city. We're having a conversation with Dance Theater of Harlem and they're saying, oh, okay, well, maybe we could work out a partnership. Then now all of a sudden, those are more resources that get leveraged right here in the city. And so it's for us, for me, for Garlia, for any of us that have like traveled and worked outside to be able to come back home and be able to pour back in. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I often think, and I hear often, you know, I'm an expat or I'm moving back into the city, and you know the you know what I
yes,
mean. You get
I
a little
do.
Bit of hate when you yes, leave the you city do. To come
absolutely.
Back.
And absolutely,
it's a whole thing. And so, you know, what are ways that we can help, you know, get rid of that stigma?
Yeah, I mean, I think we got to talk about why that's there,
yeah.
right? Like So we didn't grow up poor, we didn't grow up rich, right? And the privilege that I had is that my mother and my auntie were music teachers. So I grew up around music and the arts in this very intentional way, right? Getting piano lessons wasn't hard because I just walked into my living room. And my father is also, everybody in my family teaches except for me. I don't know what happened. but my father taught philosophy for a lot of years. So like I had this philosophy professor for a father and a music teacher for a mother and an auntie. And so I got exposure just because that was my house. And as a result, when I wanted to go to school for musical theater, you're like, who's going to go to school for musical theater? It was my parents that encouraged me to do it. And so the difference between what I had and what somebody else had might not necessarily be economic, but it might have been in those types of opportunities that gave me the ability to go to Michigan. And that and going to Michigan gave me the ability to move to New York, which gave me the ability to book tours and get work, right? And so when people that I've had conversations with are like, well, you left, it's oftentimes because those opportunities aren't equitably accessible. So the question really becomes, how do we create accessibility to those types of opportunities and to that type of education and to that type of training? I was lucky. I didn't pick my parents. I was born, right? And so like, how do you then use something like OTF, use other theater companies like Plowshares, Detroit Public Theater, like, and really uplift the access to opportunity? And that, I think, is how you start breaking down that tension. The other way to do it is just to talk to people.
Yeah.
Like, just talk to people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, 9 times out of 10, if somebody's salty, it's just because they need to have a conversation. And you sit down, you have a conversation, go over to the grill, tell John you said what up, and, like, sit down, get a drink. Everybody's going to be chill. It's not going to be a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
You know?
So, you know, bringing in Garlia, if you can talk about, once we talked about a little bit, just, you know, where you all are now from your inception in 2020 to where you are meeting in person, expanding your reach in the city of Detroit, downtown Detroit, and what you all hope to get out of it.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, I was not part of the first year of Obsidian, and I often, you know, we often joke about that, but I was able to watch the festival from home, and I was like, what is he doing, right? And I also had a similar festival, so it was like, okay, this is cool, and it's at home. And then to go into year two, I was finally able to be part of it. Felt just really exciting to start to do this work in person and in Detroit, which is such something I had made a bit of a promise to myself when I was about 18, and I said, you know, I don't know if I see the full artistic life in Detroit at this time, so I'm gonna have to go away, but someday I'll come back home. I didn't know what I'd be coming back home to do. And so I said, you know, so someday I will come home and produce and do theater and whatever I was doing, I'll come home. And so over the last, you know, 5-6 years, that has been this practice of being home and doing work with Obsidian and Detroit Public Theater. And, you know, thinking about the conversation that you were having before, I've been bringing a lot of the work that I've been doing in New York with, you know, an organization I'm part of called Harlem Nine. The first time I was on the show was about that, right? And so coming back home to do that. So coming back home for Obsidian is just an incredible experience, and for me just goes right back to what I have been wanting to do, what I made a promise to do for both myself and my art. I also come from an artistic family, so you know we have piano players and singers. I play the flute, and my dad had a choir and did Shakespeare. So we also had all of that at home. So this was just like, okay, this is what we do. And my father in particular was doing that work in Detroit. So this is like, I sometimes don't have the words to fully express how meaningful and exciting it is for me to be doing this quality of theater that is then filmed and streamed, and we make it accessible to all of the orgs and partners that I've got in New York and that John has in New York and all over, right? So I think I slightly went on a tangent, which is what I do, but also
amazing tangent, by the way.
Huh?
Amazing tangent, because you have so many questions started to form in my head. I was just thinking, like, you know, I'm hearing what you're saying. You're full circle. At 18 years old, you thought to yourself, like, I know I'm going to come back home and basically put on for my city, you know? So you came home and you decided to start up, or at least you saw the first one streaming, and you said, well, this is something that we're going to continue to do in the city of Detroit. And you helped push and expand what's happening. So if you can, go into the streaming aspect of it and what we can expect streaming this year.
You know, I will say that the streaming and John and I really operate very much in a partnership, and so the streaming is something that, you know, we've both been excited about, and that he's just been like really just amped for. And so the streaming is now live on our website. We have a couple streaming options people can access at Slate, Noir Plus, Black Pearl, and Black Pearl Plus, and you will get to experience the last 2 years of the festival. This is everything from the main stage plays, the cabaret and musical performances, the post show conversations, and a panels that were part of the first 2 years. And it is shot. We've shot it with three to four cameras, and so you've got a very high quality experience of Black art in the city of Detroit that you can see on our site. And I know for a fact that a lot of theaters, no matter their size, are not doing this work. And so it is very important to be able to see these stories written by all Black playwrights that they can then share with their friends and family, and people can look and see other experiences from the Black experience, see stories that they may not have seen, and also to know that it was done not on the East Coast, not on the West Coast, in Detroit. Predominantly black staff and black artistic a leader. So, you know, to my 18 year old self, I do not know if this is exactly what she expected, but here we are.
I don't think any 18-year-old would have expected to put on for their city in the way that you have. So, you know, thank you so much. And, you know, as we're going to close things out, performances begin Thursday, June 22nd, and they end on Sunday, June 25th.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just wanted to, I realize also that I don't know if we actually told everybody what exactly it is that we're doing.
Right?
Yeah, my bad.
We just started talking about the city.
Yeah, we're just
fault.
Hanging out.
I know. It's
That's
my
okay.
fault.
It's chill. So basically, look, y'all, so if you come downtown Detroit June 22nd through the 25th, you walk into the Bull Family YMCA. There's a beautiful theater in that space. You're going to see four plays. That's four original plays by Black playwrights that are produced and directed in this city with directors and actors and designers and line designers and composers that are all from right here. If you go across the street, you're going to see musicals, musical theater showcase at the Opera House. And if you walk a little bit further, but around the corner to Cliff Bells, you're going to be there for opening night Cabaret and Toast. These performances run multiple times throughout the weekend. So from Thursday to Sunday, don't tell me, oh, I couldn't make it to that one show. You have 12 opportunities. There are 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 opportunities for you to be able to come in and check out all the different shows that we have available. And there's something really for everybody. One thing that Garley has said, and I know I'm running long, I apologize, but one thing that Garley has said that was dope and that we all try to live by is that there is no monolithic Black experience.
Nope.
And so you're not coming to see a Black story. You're not coming to see one or two. You're coming to see a full spread. You're coming to see stories that you might completely identify with and something that might be brand new to you, no matter who you are and what you look like and where you come from. And that's okay, because that's how we learn about each other. And that's how we learn about ourselves. And so if you go to our website, Garley also just talked about the different streaming options. You can go to www.obsidianfest.org, OBSIDIANFEST.org. And you can find out all the information you need to know about how to stream, about how to watch. I want to say, too, that our content, we are committed to keeping our content free as much as possible as our contribution to the community. But I would be remiss if I didn't get in a shameless plug, because free is not easy and free is not cheap. So if you have the ability to support this work, if you care about putting money in the pockets of artists so that they can pay their bills and continue to write, then please do what you can and help us out, as we're just about to cross the finish line to be able to make sure that we can continue to produce all this amazing content. And that support is really important to make sure that this content can still remain free to those that need it.
All righty. Then we were joined in studio. Actually, we were joined on Zoom with Garley Cornelia Jones, the senior creative producer of Obsidian Festival, as well Detroit native and director of innovation in the new media at the Public Theater in New York, and John Sloan III, who was in studio with us, co-executive producer and producing artistic director of Obsidian Theater Festival. We look forward to everything. 12 options. You got 12?
12.
So you
got to see one of them at least. You see five. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you so much for joining Culture Shift this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, y'all.